Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and present to you. My name is Arfi Terzian. I work at LIU in downtown Brooklyn, New York, and I'm a partner with the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. It's my pleasure to present, can everyone hear me, by the way? Okay, great. Present results from an analysis we conducted assessing HIV-related outcomes in an HIV housing client population in New York City in 2010. Okay, I have no disclosures to disclose. Public funds are spent each year to house persons living with HIV/AIDS or PLWHA. Those who have unstable housing have been shown to have serious HIV-related health consequences. They're less likely to be prescribed antiretroviral therapy or ART. If they are prescribed, they may be more non-adherent and they have been shown to have transmit multi-drug resistant strains of HIV. Their health outcomes also tend to be poor, as evidenced by lower CD4 counts and higher viral loads, as well as higher rates of hepatitis, pneumonia, tuberculosis, compared to their stably housed counterparts. So in fiscal year 2012, $332 million were granted nationally to the housing opportunities for people with AIDS, also known as HOPWA, a housing assistance program that was established by the Department of Housing and Urban Development through the National Affordable Housing Act of 1990. So the impact of housing assistance on HIV medical care outcomes is challenging to assess. Despite recent advances reinforcing the individual and public health benefits of early HIV treatment initiation, significant gaps still remain with respect to care, linkage, and retention. ART initiation and viral load suppression, for example. These missed opportunities limit the role of treatment as prevention and jeopardize the goals of the national HIV/AIDS strategy. The objective of this analysis was to assess benefits of housing services for HIV care outcomes. Few studies, to our knowledge, have examined the impact of large-scale interventions implemented in real-world service delivery settings on HIV care outcomes. Because the New York City Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, there's a lot of acronyms here, I apologize, I'm going to say for now, DOHMH, has access to both HIV surveillance and client-level data from housing service programs for HIV New Yorkers. Therefore, the DOHMH is well-positioned to undertake such studies of real-world interventions. We assessed retention and care in 2010 among participants in a New York City DOHMH-administered HOPWA program as compared to a similar group of unenrolled group of HIV-infected New Yorkers. The DOH is the grantee of HOPWA for New York City and three counties upstate, Putnam, Westchester, and Rockland counties. HOPWA is the largest housing assistance program for HIV-infected New Yorkers. The DOHMH oversees and monitors the planning and delivery of services by 14 contracted community-based organizations, or CBOs. These services include supportive housing, rental assistance, housing placement assistance, and support services like case management. The DOHMH also reviews HIV surveillance and housing data. Until 2008, New York City HOPWA CBOs reported aggregated data to the DOHMH. So that means that we just received aggregated data like number of clients served, number of services provided in a given month, number of days in residence, so on and so forth. Starting in January 2008, however, we began receiving client-level data through New York City HOPWA eCompass. eCompass is a software to conduct contract management, quality improvement, and client satisfaction for HOPWA and other HIV programs like Ryan White. eCompass data includes but is not limited to client-level identifying information, demographic housing information, clinical and HIV treatment history. This is a hotbed of information. It's exciting to have. So that's significant because now the DOHMH can better conduct program evaluation on services provided by HOPWA with respect to care. We merged this program data, as I said, with surveillance data. So just a word on the HIV surveillance registry. It's a population-based registry of all persons diagnosed with HIV infection or AIDS as defined by the CDC and reported to the New York City DOHMH. Name-based reporting of AIDS diagnosis was mandated by New York State in 1983. HIV reporting became mandated in 2000, and all laboratory results, including CD4s and viral loads and Western blots, were reported beginning in June 2005. This registry is updated with biostatistics through matches. I can go into that more later if you're interested. Okay, this is a flowchart of the eligibility criteria we apply to HOPWA and non-HOPWA HIV-infected New Yorkers. I know, this is a really dense slide. Let's walk through it. On the left side is the flowchart for HOPWA clients. We limited HOPWA clients to those enrolled or were continuously enrolled from 2009 to January 10th. Continuously enrolled from 2009 to 2010. There were about 1,500 HOPWA clients that were continuously enrolled as of January 1st, 2010. We further restricted this group to those matched to the registry and alive at the end of 2010, and also had evidence of care in 2009, which we defined as at least one lab result in 2009. So at the end, we had 1,422 HOPWA clients in our analytic sample. We then found a comparison group from the overall HIV-infected population in New York with similar criteria. You had to be matched to the registry, not enrolled in HOPWA as of January 1st, 2010, alive at the 2010, and had evidence of care in 2009. At the end of the day, we had about 67,000 folks in our unmatched group that we were we could draw from. Okay, we performed a direct match. Why? Because we know HOPWA clients are demographically different from the overall HIV population in New York City. For example, they tend to be a high proportion are Black, Hispanic, foreign-born, female. So we wanted to make a fair comparison, to compare to two groups of people that look alike, where the only difference between the groups is housing services. To do this, we performed a one-to-one direct match, identifying one person from the surveillance registry and matching them to one person in HOPWA. Okay, so based on our exploratory analyses, we identified 8 variables that could be part of our match. Race, ethnicity, sex, transmission risk, age, poverty, country of origin, correctional history, and concurrent diagnosis of HIV/AIDS, which is a marker of late-stage infection and missed opportunity and marker of delayed initiation to care. Okay. After we selected these matching variables, we conducted a matched analysis using McNamara's test and conditional logistic regression. These are methods known for case control studies or for paired data. We also, in our regression models, adjusted for last CD4 count as of December 31st, 2009 to account for their clinical status at the start of the analytic period. Okay, so these were our 4 care outcomes. Retention, which we've used the National HIV/AIDS Strategy definition and also the HRSA definition, which is at least 2 labs at least 3 months apart in a 12-month period. Our first measure of viral suppression was having any undetectable viral load in 2010. Undetectable was defined as a viral load 400 copies per milliliter or less. Okay, why are we using such a conservative cutoff? Because we have hundreds of labs that report to us, and they all have different testing platforms, and some of them use old testing assays. And so some of them have lower limit of detection. Let's say their assay can only detect at 400 copies per milliliter, so we wanted to have a conservative cutoff. The second measure of viral suppression was having any 2 consecutive undetectable viral loads in 2010. Our definition for viral rebound is having at least one detectable viral load greater than 400 copies per milliliter following 2 consecutive viral loads that were undetectable. Okay, this table summarizes the sociodemographic characteristics of 2 groups. The HOPWA sample on the right. Where's my thing here? Oopsie. Oh, I don't have a. Okay, I'm moving on. I thought I had my. Oh, I do have it. Okay. The HOPWA sample on the right and PLWHA, the unmatched group in care in 2009. Again, it's the 66,822. So what did we find? It's what we expected. We had a higher proportion of females in the HOPWA sample, 38% versus 30%. A higher proportion of Black and Hispanics in the HOPWA sample. A higher proportion of foreign-born in the HOPWA sample. And we had a higher proportion of those aged 25 to 39 years of age. Okay, I'm moving on to the next slide, which is a continuation. And what did we find here? HOPWA clients were more likely to have a heterosexual transmission risk, more likely to be incarcerated, that's 21% compared to 15%, and more likely to have a concurrent diagnosis of HIV with AIDS, 11% versus 8%. Also, HOPWA clients At their last CD4 count in 2009, they had a lower proportion, with a high CD4 count compared to the PLWHA, meaning that they were sicker at the start of our analytic period. Okay, here's my snazzy yet humble graphics, my animation here. So the total number of people in our retention analysis was about 2,800 folks. In the HOPWA group, about 93% of them had retention in 2010, as compared to the matched group, the other PLWHA sample, which only had 83% retention. Okay, moving on. My first measure of viral suppression, again, one undetectable viral load in 2010. HOPWA clients, we observed 82% had at least one undetectable viral load in 2010, as compared to 82% in the matched group, so no difference here. The second measure of viral suppression, again, in this cohort, the total number was about 1,486 folks. In HOPWA, 86% had two consecutive undetectable viral loads in 2010, as compared to 85% in the matched group. So again, no difference. Lastly, viral rebound. The overall group in this analysis was 1,006 people. In the HOPWA group, among the 503 HOPWA clients, 431, or 86%, rebounded, as compared to the other matched group, the other PLWHA sample, 85%. So again, very similar. So the box outlined in red above summarizes in words the results of the regression models highlighted in the table below. In the retention analysis, HOPWA clients were nearly 2.5 times more likely to achieve retention or be retained in care than the other PLWHA sample. They were only 10% more likely to be virally suppressed, but the matched odds ratios were not statistically significant. Essentially, there was no difference in their risk of rebounding as well. Conclusions. Okay, this analysis is one of first analyses, as I mentioned, that merges HIV surveillance and program data, allowing us to better monitor HIV-related outcomes by intervention status. So by comparing HIV-infected New Yorkers receiving HOPWA housing services to a demographically similar group of HIV-infected New Yorkers, we found that HOPWA clients had better retention and care, though this difference did not persist in the suppression and viral rebound outcomes. What does this mean? Why did we see differences in one outcome but not in the rest of the outcomes? Our next slide summarizes the strengths and limitations of the analysis that may offer some explanation. Okay, another dense slide. I'd like you to look to the bottom here, bottom right. One explanation was that our groups were not as dissimilar as we thought. The control group we excluded from the PLWHA, we made sure that they were not in HOPWA or not receiving housing services as of January 1st, 2010. However, it turned out that 50% of them were receiving some sort of housing assistance after January 1st, 2010 or some point prior to January 1st, 2010. So as a result, what we observed may have been washed out. Another explanation is that we may not have controlled for all factors related to HOPWA and care, HOPWA status and care. We were limited to variables collected in the registry, and we were not able to account for factors such as education, mental health status, history of substance misuse, all of these things that may relate to their ability to, that may have masked the relationship. We do know that HOPWA clients tended to have a lower CD4 count at the start of 2010, and that they were sicker than non-HOPWA PLWHA. Being sicker may have explained why they had higher retention. If you're sicker, you tend to go to the doctor more, you're more likely to be retained in care. But there were no difference in treatment outcomes, and so perhaps mental health and history of substance abuse would have accounted for why we didn't see any difference in viral suppression or viral rebound. Another explanation, if you look at, so that was also number two here. Another explanation is that our analyses are limited to measuring utilization of care services, not necessarily quality of care. Maybe the relationship between the client and the provider was not as strong in the HOPWA group than the non-HOPWA. Maybe their case managers didn't have an engaged relationship with the HOPWA clients compared to the non-HOPWA clients. We didn't look at facility type where they were receiving care. Maybe there's a difference in receiving care in an inpatient setting versus an outpatient setting. All of these factors we did not account for, but we do have this information, and looking forward in our next steps, we do plan to explore these. Okay, lastly, perhaps HOPWA clients may have had a higher level of resistance to treatment compared to non-HOPWA, making them less responsive to treatment. So despite these limitations, this analysis had many strengths, namely serving as our baseline assessment for program evaluations of HIV housing services in New York City with respect to HIV care. In our next steps, we plan to do a lot, and we will continue to explore this rich HOPWA program database that we have now, as it's still relatively new to the DOHMH. I'd like to acknowledge the Bureau of HIV AIDS Prevention and Control, HIV Epi and Field Services, our colleagues at the Bureau of Epi Services, and the staff and the people who make up New York City HOPWA. Thank you.
Thank you.